Okay, we're going to start the meeting. I appreciate that we do not have a quorum yet, but we're going to start, and when the quorum comes in, we will officially call it and do some of the other business. And tonight, we have before us four different groups that will be given some presentations on
brand names that they do want to look at alternates. And again, in many materials, there are not safe alternates, and many plastics, including some of the products like polyolefins, there's just not really effective type flame retardants to use in these materials. The alternates that we'd be have to use, there's a lot less study done on those. We don't know about the long-term safety effects on these alternates.
The courts, public safety, and the Department of Corrections, and I think Representative Smith and Representative Murphy, who's chaired this committee in the past, know that there's nothing more important to the citizenry of the state of Minnesota than public safety, that it affects our quality of life, and whether crime is real or perceived in our neighborhoods, it has a profound impact on the perceptions that people have about livability. As you also know, the Department of Corrections has been the major driver for costs for our division, in part because of the sex offender legislation that we passed over the years, and also the increased drug offenses have probably caused the largest spike. We have some huge issues here relative to funding. The courts are overwhelmed. They're threatening layoffs. The governor has made his recommendation, but it's $36 million short of what the courts have recommended. So we'll have to sort that out. I have no problems with any of the governor's change items, his recommendations to our division. I think that they're all good. The one area where I think that I would like to see as committee chair some additional focus is in the area of crime prevention. Since I've been in the legislature and been on this committee, I think we've seen a decline in a commitment to crime prevention. I would like to rebuild that if possible, but again, funding is going to have to be what we're going to have to examine. The other issue that I'm hoping that we'll be able to address in committee is the whole, what's common language in criminology now, the whole effort in reentry. And this has a lot to do with the fact that 95 to 97% of all the inmates who are incarcerated in our institutions are leaving prison at some point. And they're moving back into our neighborhoods, and they're moving back into our communities. So the question is are they prepared to fully reintegrate into our society once they leave prison? And so the idea is can we provide these inmates with housing, with job training, with treatment while they're in prison, as well as treatment while they get out of prison and reintegrate back with their families and back in society. So this is a major challenge. The governor's recommended $3 million. I'm not sure that's sufficient to do some of the things that some of us would like to do, and I think we have bipartisan support for the whole notion of reentry. We have about a 65% recidivism rate. If we can reduce that, it will save the state a considerable amount of money, not to mention just the humane policy advantages of reentry. So I don't know that Representative Smith and I are totally in disagreement on anything relative to public safety, but I'll let him respond to my presentation.
Okay, before we do that, I want to officially call the meeting to order. We do have a quorum. Let's take care of a couple of housekeeping things first. The minutes of February 22nd are in your packet. Representative Mary Murphy, would you be so kind as to move those?
Did the last time.
Oh, did you? Well, then Representative Shumper will move. I know he read it. Okay, and all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Representative Swigum, did you move last time too?
No, but I'm not going to this time either.
I got to find someone who was there last time. Representative Kathy. No, she's not here either.
I'll be happy to move.
Oh, Representative Hilty. No, no. Yes, okay. Of the meeting of February 26th. I would read.
Level of PBDs. And that, for them, from a policy perspective, the question is, do we wait as policymakers until the level reaches a point and in which there are enough studies that show that there's harm, or do we begin to act now before we reach that point? And they seem to really struggle with this issue about avoiding adopting a policy that will allow continued buildup. It seems to me that there's...
I take a brief look in a rearview mirror and tell you what I think the importance is of the House Public Safety Committee. Also, I want to tell you what I think the committee has done and what it can do. My opinion of what the obligation of government is, and then suggest it to you, Chairman, that when Chair Paymar asks for money for the Public Safety Committee, he's going to need it, and rightfully so. Looking in the rearview mirror just a little bit, Chairman, and the members of the committee, the Public Safety Committee is an important and a very important element of the House. If looking over the last couple of years, Chairman, the Public Safety Committee held more hearings than any other committee in the House. It had more bills passed through it that it worked over, more bills that were signed into law than any other committee in the House. It saw in its 2 years, the last 2 years, more public safety facilities were funded in 05 and 06 than at any other time in Minnesota history. Just looking at some specifics within those generalities, I'm going to remind you, Chairman, of the funeral protest bill that came before our committee. It was in part in reaction to very traumatic events going on even in our own state. The natural human reaction was to knee-jerk and just say no to protest. But the committee took it as a test to see to the constitutional protected fact of freedom of speech. And it created a bill that was that saw to the constitutionality test of time, place, and manner on allowing protest, but also to protect the families in the time of the most hideous assault that could ever occur on a family, time of burying their own child. The bill that went through that committee, Mr. Chairman, passed the House by 121-2, and ultimately the Senate by 66-1. Another item the Public Safety Committee gave this state was in the form of child custody and domestic violence issues that we saw. Some new procedures were needed and passed for child custody hearings where domestic violence was alleged. The bill that went through our committee passed 132-0 in the House, 54-0 in the Senate. In 2005, the committee gave you and the legislature the Child Support Reform Act. We totally replaced Minnesota's child support guidelines with a new, more fair system that is more in line with the majority of the states. That passed the House by 127-7. That was the work of this committee. The 06 Family Law Reform Bill, measures that were left out of the previous one dealing with such mundane but very important elements to a family, such as when a criminal moves into a home where there's a child, protecting adoptive parents and some other things. That bill was the 06 Family Law Reform Bill. That passed the House by 107-22 and the Senate by 59-2. That was signed into law. The Public Safety Committee in the House also reinstituted the Firefighter Training Board. Saw to its funding. 131-0 passed by the House. The 06 Fire Safety Fund was established. And yes, it raised some insurance fees, but it has now spread those out across the state, making this state safer. That was a product and a creature of the House Public Safety Committee, and that passed the House by 114-19 votes. A couple of other items that the Public Safety Committee gave you was the 05 Omnibus Public Safety Bill. And I would point out that that bill was the only omnibus bill signed in 05 that was done on budget, on time, and signed by the governor before the state saw a brief shutdown, Mr. Chairman. And that was as a result of your Public Safety Committee.
Well, the second one, because I served on the conference committee, state government, that wouldn't do it.
Well, I overlooked that in my field, too.
It's a pleasure to be before your committee for the first time as a testifier. This bill, members, is the work of a very visionary group of people up in Lake County, a very visionary county commissioner, actually, as well, who was recently killed in an accident. Senator Bach and I met with their director of lands, Mr. Martinson, who's with me today, and Claire Nelson last summer to discuss this land transaction. This member is very short and sweet.
It's longer sentences to career criminals and also safety to correction workers who are union workers. So the Public Safety Committee is an important part in doing exactly what Chairman Paymar, who has his heart, his mind, and his talent in the right direction, and that is to see to the first job of a civilized society is to provide for safety and the delivery of justice to the state. And that means we're going to have to see to the line item provision of resources for the Supreme Court, the Court of Appeals, the trial courts, the tax court, the Uniform Laws Commission, the Judicial Standards Board, the public defenders, the Public Safety Department, the Private Detective Board, the Human Rights Department, the corrections, the prisons, and the Sentencing Guidelines Commission. We can do it. Chairman Paymar can do it. I'll help him in private. I'll tell at the committee level, I'll tell him when he's doing it right, and in private, I'll tell him where he's wrong and help him every step of the way. He doesn't need a lot of it, but we're going to need some money, and that's what we're here to suggest to you.
Thank you very much. I appreciate very much the presentation. Again, if there's anybody who wants to have a quick question, it's an opportunity. Representative Schumper?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And gentlemen, I'm wondering what your budget outlooks look like for restoring cuts in programs for domestic abuse. Do they come under your committee?
Representative Paymar?
Mr. Chair, we're hoping to restore, I don't know if restore is the right word, but battered women's shelters, of course, took a huge hit in the 2003 budget cuts, and I think Representative Smith and I recognize the importance throughout the state of Minnesota to ensure that victims of domestic violence have safety to flee an abusive spouse, and hopefully we'll find the resources to make that a reality. Representative Smith, I think, will be authoring. Are you doing this?
Yeah.
Yes. But Smith will be the chief author of the bill.
I'll take that.
Resounding yes.
It all depends.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Any other questions? If not, thank you very much for your very good presentation.
Thank you.
And I'd like to then call up the Ag, Economics, and Veteran Affairs Division. And again, it doesn't matter which one goes first, Representative Dunkey, Representative Finstead, whatever. Again, if you've ever heard, the shorter the presentation, the bigger the budget.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Welcome to the committee.
And appreciate the invitation, and Mr. Chair, members, staff, we're pleased to come and present to you a short description of our budget and where we see our priorities lying. Joined by Representative Finstead, who is the Republican lead. And I will tell you, members, and we can all think we all work bipartisanly, and we do for the most part. Usually it's green lights on the board. But I think we brag, and rightly so, that the Ag Committee is indeed the most bipartisan committee in this place. We rarely break down on party lines on issues and other things, and we truly try and pass out a party bill. And that's been true, whether it was Chairman Wenzel back in the old DFL days, or Chairman David's Ness, Finstead. We got a Finstead and a Finseth, Harder, Swenson. We've had a lot of good chairs over there, and we've striven to work together, Mr. Chair. So hopefully that will continue. Agriculture, unfortunately, the budgets we have we'll be talking about today are agriculture, AURI, Ag Utilization Research Institute, Animal Board of Health, and the Veterans Affairs Department comes under our purview. And unfortunately, starting with agriculture, it makes up about 0.5% of the state's budget. From a lot of committees on renewable energy, certainly agriculture. We will have and intend to have a biofuels section again in our bill, which oversees again our ethanol producer payment program, anything to do with biodiesel. But also this year, members, we're proposing and working with the administration as well as across the aisle on research dollars, research and grant monies that have been proposed by the administration, and frankly that we'd like to beef up a little bit, and we have ideas on how we can do that, because again, we're busy planning for our future in agriculture, and our future part of it is renewables, and a big part of that will be biofuels, Mr. Chair. Just to give you an idea of our past investments, for members to refresh your memory, on the first ethanol producer payment program we had, which we're still completing in our budget, we invested roughly $350 million over 10 years. Into that program. The return we've gotten for that to date, it has grown to a $2.8 billion, that's with a B, billion-dollar, latest estimates this year, industry, almost exclusively in rural Minnesota. We think that was a good investment. Biodiesel, by the way, is up to $965 million per year. Combine both of those products and plants and jobs and all the things that come from them, you're almost $4 billion in biofuels on that really a $350 million investment. We thought that was wise use of the taxpayers' dollars, and we're looking to invest strategically and wisely into those next generation products now, and certainly that'll be a big focus of what we do. The Ag Department also, members and Mr. Chair, they protect our food supply, and certainly we want to see that enhanced and preserved over there, and so we'll be looking, whether it's ag inspectors or the governor. There's some places we do differ, and we'll have some discussions. One of them I know is near and dear to folks up in the northeast corner. There's been a call to discontinue our grain inspection up at the Duluth Harbor. Four people that work on that program have been asked to step aside. We think those inspections are important. Our small grain growers think they're important, and we think for food safety and other issues that are out there now that we need to continue programs like that where the Ag Department is overseeing our food safety in this state. So we will be asking for targets and other things that address food safety issues, which not only comes under Ag, but Animal Board of Health, which I'll touch on briefly. Otherwise, there's other peripheral things in Ag that we don't think of, but if you look at the USDA, they work with a lot of food stamps and other types of things. Here in the Department of Agriculture, we do a little of that also. We provide milk to the food shelves, and we're going to be asking for additional dollars for that. We think that's a good use of state dollars to supply our food shelves with fresh milk. In the past, they've gotten milk that's about a day or two ready or a day or two over expiration. They try and ship it to our food shelves. You know, it's sour by the time it gets out to the tables. We've been using dollars in the last few years to buy fresh milk for our food shelves and supply it, and we'll be asking for dollars for that again. Quickly, Animal Board of Health, again, protection of our food supplies. We're dealing with bovine TB in the northern part of the state. We need to eradicate that or work on a program to do that. So we're going to be asking for resources for that, as well as the avian influenza, the bird flu. That is reared up again around the world. It's only a matter of time before it comes to Minnesota. We're going to be the first line of defense for that and other livestock-borne diseases. So we take that charge very seriously. AURI is our value-added research entity in the state. We heard a presentation from them today. We think their budget is about one-half of what it should be based on the cuts of the last few years. And so, members, I should digress a bit. AURI, Animal Board of Health Agriculture, basically, members, 4 years ago when the state was 14% in deficit, these departments took a 28% cut, twice what the deficit was, and way more than grants and loans will probably put through that authority. We can put one-time money, revolving loan money in there for those people to administer and have that pool there for years and years to come without actually having to put it into the base. So we are going to have some requests for budgets for one-time monies too that we think will be wisely focused on a lot of the issues that we're talking about in agriculture, so we don't have to worry about base budgets and ease you on that a little bit. Veterans Affairs quickly. The Veterans Affairs Department, as you know, the governor has proposed a $75 million package for veterans. A lot of that is in higher ed and taxes, but we do have part of it in the state soldier assistance program. We have actually a higher ed assistance program in there. It's not part of the higher ed, but part of ours. We have communications and outreach budgets for our veterans community, and we also have grants that we provide to your county veteran service officers. Each one of you, every county has a veteran service officer. We oversee those people, although the counties fund them, but we supplement that funding with grants and other things on a needs basis, and we have a number of requests in that area too, as well as there's quite a number of bills coming down on veterans. It seems to be a year with the Iraqi war and other things. A lot of folks are focused on veterans affairs, and so we're going to see to it, if we can, that we take care of those needs in the best way possible. But again, Mr. Chair and others, it will take some resources and probably some more FTEs over there, at least at this point in time in history, to talk about some of the things we need. So with that, I think that's a broad overview of where we're at, and I'll turn it over to my compatriot here, Representative Finstead.
Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Junkie. I want to point out something that we don't talk about enough, and that is Minnesota is an ag leader in this country. If you look down the commodities that we produce in the state, we're in the top five, top ten almost all the time. Top five in corn production, top five in soybean production. Excuse me, I could go on and on. One thing I do want to point out is we're number one state in the nation in turkey production. And so I'm looking, sitting here with Representative Turkey himself, the biggest turkey, who represents probably the most turkeys of... and that's no offense to your constituents.
The animals.
Would you like to start your testimony over?
What about right what I thought it would? So it doesn't get talked about enough. So as from the Ag Committee perspective, we're very happy to, I guess, talk about the great things that the farmers and egg producers in the state have done and will do. We have, as I wanted to put my thoughts together for this, I think I'm going to keep quick in your comments with me earlier today. The shorter you talk, the more chance you have of getting a better budget number. So I will keep quick. Representative Junkie talked on a lot of the areas that we're working on, but I will say from the House Republican Caucus, we are working hard with Representative Junkie and others to stay in touch and to stay engaged in the budget overviews that we've been going through in committee, and we look forward to working with Representative Junkie and the committee on putting together a budget that we hopefully all can support and send out of that committee. So I want to thank you, Mr. Chair, for giving us the opportunity, and that's it.
Questions at all? I have one that I have, and that is, as I read the periodicals and the papers and farm journals and other business-related, energy-related publications, I see there's an awful lot of interest in renewable energy, and we know that from one of the bills we've passed. But I also see there's an awful lot of people saying that, you know, if I get some research money, I'll solve all the energy problems in the whole state. And I suppose maybe though some of those are accurate, but my question is, what kind of, first of all, controls are we having on that, because you mentioned research, and what kind of coordination do we have on any dollars that we put into research, both in
They've actually put together a mechanism for addressing some of what you're talking about. They have developed what's called their Energy Roundtable, and they have brought the University of Minnesota, MinSCU, AURI, and other leaders in that field together in this state, and they meet, I don't know how many times a year now, and they are facilitating these meetings through exactly what you said, to start coordinating where that next step of renewable energy research and development is coming from and where it's going. So we are trying to get a handle on that, and this group, I believe, is the group to do it, since they're not, you know, they're really a standalone entity that we established back in 1987, and I think they're a perfect nonpartisan type group to do that. And I know they're reporting over in the next week or so. They're going to have a request for that group for budgeting also to continue their work. So number one, I want to assure you there is some coordination on this going on, and we are looking at it as chairs of where a lot of this energy research and dollars are actually coming through the committees. Number two, it's our intent, Mr. Chair, and I hope other committees in this House too, to be as nondescript and as non-directive as possible with our research and development dollars at this point, because frankly, we do not know what the next fuel source will be. We hear about cellulosic ethanol. That's true. That's coming. But we don't know if it's an enzymatic breakdown or if it's a thermal breakdown. We don't know if it's switchgrass or mixed prairie grasses. We don't know if it's wood products from your area, Mr. Chair. We don't know if it's newspaper. We don't know if it's corn stalks or soybean stubble or sunflowers. We don't know what it is, and we shouldn't pretend that we do. And frankly, there are a number of bills introduced that are very directive yet at this point, that are saying you will set up producer payment monies, for example, for prairie grass on a cellulosic ethanol program. Frankly, I don't believe our committee's going to suggest that we're ready to do that yet. But rather, we need to give the money to the folks at our universities and our private research areas that are working on this. Let them go ahead for the next 3 to 5 years and then come back and revisit and understand, do we now start to get a direction of where we're going and where we need to put that next ethanol or biodiesel money into, if you will, Mr. Chair. So we are concerned about that. We've been talking about that quite frequently in our committees. And again, we're going to have to write language for these grant dollars and others if that comes to fruition, and we're going to have to make some descriptions in there. You know, certainly we support community-based energy as opposed to other forms would get a priority, but we think we need to put some monies out there, low interest, not very well backed monies, frankly, to do some of this research and development, particularly around our smaller energy projects out there, so we can get an idea. And I will complete this. We are trying to keep a handle on the federal Farm Bill also, because we believe there's going to be some opportunities and some monies coming there too, but unfortunately, they're not going to be done until September, October at the earliest. And so for us and to understand how we coordinate with them and utilize their dollars with our dollars, we may be back next year actually looking at some supplements or making some adjustments to what we've done.
Representative Kahn? Oh. Well, Richard, maybe Representative Finsen, would you want to react or have anything to add to that?
No, I would say the only thing, Mr. Chair, is that Representative Junkie also should be commended on bringing in the egg special to the University of Minnesota. He's offered us opportunities as a committee to look over that and to, debate a little bit and open up the conversation on where those targeted dollars are going towards the University of Minnesota and not just where they're going, but what type of research they're going to based on renewable energy, whether it be cellulose-based ethanol, corn-based ethanol, biodiesel, whatever it may be. He's giving the committee an opportunity to look at that and pass recommendations on, so I think that's a great step in the right direction.
Good. William Kahn?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, our sister state or nearby neighbor, North Dakota, has moved ahead on industrial hemp. Are you guys going to be interested in moving ahead on that?
Representative Kahn, actually, Representative Poppy brought that up to me, too, as we were talking about special, she's one of the authors on the Ag Special Bill, which, by the way, we've moved back a week. I haven't told my colleague this yet, but we're going to do it next week because of timing problems. But she asked about it also. Representative Kahn, we would be ready to go. I was asked at a conference on Friday out in Wilmer, Animal Ag Conference, if he could use industrial hemp for cellulosic ethanol, which I suppose you could, but I think there's much better uses for the oils and the seeds and the long fibers for clothes and other things that come from industrial hemp. For those of you who don't know, a legislator in North Dakota has actually applied for a 10-acre plot of industrial hemp. North Dakota passed some laws last year that allowed the production of industrial hemp. One of the legislatures actually applied for the first license for 10 acres and has been approved by North Dakota, but now the stickling point is the federal government hasn't approved it yet. So that application has now been sent on to the feds for their perusal and their approval, about a $2,300 fee, non-refundable, to get them to look at it. And I suspect if that comes back not approved, there may be a lawsuit pending from North Dakota. So they are taking a proactive role. Certainly, I think our committee, and we did this in the past, I think Representative Finn Seth actually had your bill, maybe, or someone else's. We had talked about it and took testimony. At that time, there was no one on the committee that was against it. So I think you have broad support, at least in the agriculture community, on it. And certainly, we'd entertain a bill on that, Representative Kahn, if it was similar to North Dakota's.
We'll try not to get into policy if we can help it. But it's a good question. Representative Shumper.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Junkie, you mentioned the ethanol payments. Are the ethanol plants showing net profit yet in our state?
Representative Junkie.
Mr. Chair and Representative Shumper, most of them are, yes. There's some smaller plants that are Buffalo Lake and others that are always close on the margins. But some of the larger plants, particularly those that have expanded to 50 million gallons, are definitely showing some profits at this time.
Thank you, Chair. Any other burning questions? If not, thank you very much. We appreciate your testimony and look forward to working with you.
Thank
you.
We
went really long. next one is Housing and Policy and Finance. Karen and Representative.
I don't
buy it.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Welcome to the committee, Representative Clark.
Thank you. It's Housing Policy and Finance and Public Health Finance. That's the name of the case. A little long.
Yes.
Just wanted to go kind of tag team here. I wanted to say that, first of all, the committee started out with a bang. We took a tour of the homeless shelters, and I think it set a tone for the whole committee where we decided that we were really going to look at the real needs of people around housing policy. And we have heard in an ongoing way from our housing advocates and organizations, our community action groups, our hunger solution groups, throughout the time that we've been meeting. In terms of agreement with the governor's budget, one of the things that we do have strong agreement with is the need for increased housing. The governor put in about $44 million additional dollars. The areas of disagreement, I guess, would be is that the advocates and some of us on the committee feel that doesn't even get us back to where we were before the 203 cuts. And there's some areas that are neglected in the governor's budget. For example, one of the things that we had testimony on, one of the bills that's already part of our omnibus bill, is looking at homeless and runaway youth. Just for your information, one of the things we learned on our housing shelter tour, the first time we did, is that the policy and for most young kids who are out in the streets today is to give them a bus token to ride the bus all night long. That's our homeless shelter for youth. So there's some real human needs that we need that we are addressing. I could just say that in that regard, that the advocacy community has really challenged us to put in a lot more additional dollars, about 70% more additional dollars. And I'm not quite sure, you know, where we will get that. Maybe this chairman and others look kindly on our target. But we do know that the need that's been proposed is real, and the actual dollars that are there don't begin to meet it at this point. It's been kind of a neglected area in terms of housing. I wanted to mention, so there's both a good thing that the governor did put in some good money. We're happy about that. We just know that we need to go further with it. And I won't go into details on that unless you all want to hear about it, because there are some exciting proposals that the governor and us are working on together. But I did want to mention that the Department of Health is our other agency that we work with. And we have been spending a lot of time looking at their various proposals, the budgets that they have had in the past. And it's clear that there's room for a lot of discussion, I guess we can say, on some of those issues, some of the programs that are in that budget. One of the things that I think we have done a little more on than they have been used to in the past is looking at some of the environmental health issues. So we have a subcommittee that's called Environmental Justice and Healthy Housing. And it is one of the areas where the health department and the housing agencies come together very well in our committee. We need to look at those connections between health and housing. And some of the bills that we've heard and that have not yet been addressed by the governor's budget include things like heart disease and stroke prevention, hearing impaired children, efforts to deal with more effectively preventing childhood lead poisoning, family home visiting. There's a number of areas like that, and I think I'll turn it over to my colleague, Representative Stevenson.
Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members, and it's a pleasure to be here, and it's a pleasure to work on this committee with Representative Clark. She's run an excellent committee. It's just been very enlightening to see a lot of the programs that we've got out there, and I think particularly for the governor's initiative, I think he's put forth a strong initiative on the program to end long-term homelessness, and we see that with some aggressive monetary budget things that he's put in. Again, there's only so many dollars that we've got, one-time dollars and ongoing budget dollars, so there's some hard choices that need to be made here. I think the other issues with the public health are really a lot of needs out there. As Representative Clark has stated, there's people who are falling through the crack, and there are some other programs that I think need the attention. Again, this is limited resources, and I think the proposals that we have an opportunity to put together will come before you, and I'm sure that we're going to have to make some hard choices. But as a committee that looks to the public to come and testify and come before us, I think there are some significant needs that are out there, and part of our problem is that we've got, we're engaged, we're listening to them, we understand their needs, and when it comes to dollars and cents, it makes it difficult to separate the faces from the needs. So I guess I wouldn't wish this on anybody. But we're here to do a job, and Representative Clark has run a tremendous committee, and it's been an honor being a part of it.
Thank you. Any particular questions? Representative Stewart, quick question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Chair Clark, I miss the issues of housing, not serving on the committee, and I've learned a lot from you over the years of serving on a housing committee with you, and I know the governor has had an initiative that he has called, ending homelessness by a year date specific, and I know that, I share that goal. I don't know how far down the road we're getting with that. Can you discuss a bit the funding, and I know this has happened in the past, so I'm just curious this year. Supportive housing, transitional housing are two key areas where we fund in the state of Minnesota, and they're distinctly different.
Mm-hmm.
And they serve different individuals that have different needs or barriers. And I know sometimes we rob Peter to pay Paul in these areas. And can you enlighten me in any discussion on how we're helping serve those individuals in their housing?
either represent Clark or represent Stevenson.
So we can both turn it
Stevens. Simpson, I'm sorry.
Severson.
Severson. He said Simpson. And he's on coffee late for supper. I'm sorry.
Mr. Chairman, first of all, Representative Sturgis, you're welcome to visit any time. You know, appreciate your involvement. Yeah, the governor did have a very aggressive proposal to deal with at least the structural part of long-term homelessness. So we had, for example, in our bonding bill last year, some very significant, in the last couple of years, a very significant increase in funding for long-term homelessness, and there have been housing built throughout the state. I think you pointed out, though, one of the issues dealing with do we have the services that then go along with those housing that's being built. So supportive housing and transitional housing. And the governor did have it in his budget proposals for both of those. Not as much for transitional housing. From the advocates, there's been a very strong desire that we have more dollars committed to transitional housing. And the governor has been working, I think, more to put dollars into supportive housing that goes along with some of the structures that are being built. It's quite an interesting discussion because people talk about, what happens when you do empower people to live in housing that they can afford and then deal with some of their either mental health issues or job issues, job training issues. Transitional housing may do more of a job of helping people make the transition out into more permanent housing. But the people who are working in supportive housing feel like they're doing that job too. So it's quite an interesting discussion because there's different things that are needed for different populations. I think for me, the truth is that we need both. We need both. And we really shouldn't just be having one or the other.
Representative Stevenson?
I think, in the Family Homeless Prevention Assistance Program, the governor from the last budget here was $7,430,000. He's bumped that up by $7.5 million to $14 million. And as we went out to the homeless shelters, it's one of those things that tugs at your heartstrings because we have people who are on freezing nights. They're sometimes relegated, as Representative Clark had said, to riding the bus to stay warm. And I think this budget leans in on that. I think he's identified this as one of the projects, and now that we have some dollars that we can actually put some bucks into and make a difference here. I think, there's a lot of dollars in the governor's budget that are distributed around. One of the ones that I looked at was a challenge, and he's got a big heart. I guess my heart wouldn't have been quite that big. We kind of cut that back from 15 down to 13.5 one-time money, and the bottom line of that was eligibility for a minimum salary pay at $34,000. I think we can go a little lower than that, but I think overall the program is a good program that really addresses some of the needs that we need to do to move forward in this program. Obviously, we went a $4.5 billion budget shortfall. We looked at where we could cut dollars, and we cut dollars across the board, and sometimes in a little more vulnerable areas than others, and I think this budget goes a long way to try and repair that.
Before you leave, I just want to tell you the magic number of the magic number that the advocates are looking at, that we need an additional is about $90 million. So just keep in mind. And that, Mr. Yeah. Chairman, for example, if you look at low homeless youth, that's about a fourth of the need. So we're not. This isn't like excess, bags of money that we're talking about.
Okay. Thank you. Any other questions? Well, one of the questions that we're going to have, and it's in the next relationship with Representative Clark as well, and that is there's going to have to be quite a bit of coordination between your committee and Representative Severson and others on the relationship for the next committee on TANF monies go back and forth. And I know the governor has made some recommendations in that, and we need to have you two chairs and the leads working strongly and closely together to coordinate those efforts. Okay. Welcome to the committee, Representative Huntley.
Well, Mr. Chair and members, last but not least, whatever appropriate it's for this particular committee.
Before you start, I want to say that last night in Rochester, we had a panel, and the first panel was on health and other issues that deal with all of us as we age and do everything else and want to have health care and the nursing home care and everything else that deals with it. And I, quite frankly, I was extremely impressed with the testimony we received in Rochester. It was a whole gamut of issues dealing with health care, nursing home care, preventive care, all the things that we sometimes talk about, and I thought I was glad that you were able to make it there. So continue on then.
Mr. Chair and members, just a sort of overview of this department's or this committee's budget, which includes most of the Department of Human Services and some of the Department of Health. This committee deals with those parts of the Department of Health that regulate nursing homes, hospitals, long-term care facilities, and the parts of the health department that also do policy formation in terms of collecting information about our healthcare system. And they also spend some money on medical education, which I'll talk about in a minute. Overall, this Department of Human Services and this little bit of the health department accounts for about 36.5% of the state spending. Okay, and it's 27% of the overall general fund budget. And in addition to the general fund budget, it spends money out of the healthcare access fund, out of the TANF reserve, and spends a lot of federal money. The department spends about $4.5 billion annually from the general fund, about $500 million annually from the healthcare access fund, about $236 million annually from TANF reserves, and over $4 billion in federal Medicaid dollars. For most of what we spend on medical assistance, the federal government gives us a dollar-for-dollar match. One thing you need to understand, people like to complain about welfare and how it's bankrupting the state, and if you simply look at the programs that are really aimed at cash subsidies for folks that we think of as welfare, that's the Minnesota Family Investment Program, and that's about $60 million a year. So it's less than 1% of the state budget that goes for the cash part of what we think of as welfare. Now, some of those same people we think of as welfare are also getting medical assistance, and there's some significant spending on their health care. Based on the November forecast, the healthcare access fund should spend about $400 million every year. And for those that don't know, the healthcare access fund is derived from two sources. One is the provider tax, also it's basically a sales tax on hospital bills and doctor bills and dentist bills. And then there's, in addition, a HMO premium tax that puts some money in there. But that fund, the healthcare access fund, was intended to fund Minnesota Care, which is the program, state program for working folks that don't get insurance where they work. The medical assistance general fund base for families and children, that's what we think of as welfare, is about $760 million a year. So we spend a lot of health care dollars on these families with children that are on medical assistance. But if you compare that $760 million to what we spend on medical assistance general fund for elderly and disabled care, that's $1 billion. And then if you add the medical assistance money that goes into long-term care, that is about $1.6 billion a year. So most of the money in these budget lines are going to support and provide medical care to seniors and people with disabilities. That's the big bulk of the money. In addition, this committee oversees the state's operated services. These are regional treatment centers and some facilities spread out in communities that, treat people that are mentally ill or have developmental disabilities. We also have the Minnesota Sex Offender Program. This is for sexual predators that have served their sentence, and they're now, they get transferred out of the correction system into state hospitals, where we, or this department then, or the Department of Human Services is responsible for funding that. The governor's budget has some additions, and you know, part of this budget are, they have what are called forecast accounts, which means that there's no limit on the money that's spent on that account. If somebody shows up and they're eligible, they're in the program whether there's money there or not. And so sometimes we run deficits in some of these programs because more people showed up than we thought would. Some of the governor's new proposals are some changes in the MFIP program that we have to do because of federal regulation changes. He's got about a $6 million additional proposal there. He has a proposal for MFIP for legal non-citizens that costs about $2 million. He has a number of other programs, some of which I won't list all of them, but one thing that's there was a federal cut last year in a program called Targeted Case Management, which this state was got about half the funding in the, or half the cuts in the country ended up being stuck on Minnesota, and that's because we were very effective at using that program. That program is used at targeting families where the kids are likely to be taken away from the home, and making sure that they get appropriate care. And Minnesota did a great job with that, very successful. And again, it's no good deed goes unpunished, so the feds decided to get rid of that program. The governor has instituted a one-time $40 million input to sort of get the counties through at least one more year.
Is that that total cut about $87 million, something like that, $90 million?
Yeah, it was state. Well, the numbers are kind of soft, but it, what we heard last year was going to be about $85 million statewide,
yeah,
per year. Per year, and it was roughly $33 million to Hennepin County, and St. Louis County was about $3.5 million. So it was significant cuts. The governor has some proposals that relate to expanding health insurance for people, one of which is Healthy Connections, which will probably start out as a separate bill, but ultimately end up in the omnibus bill. One of the things he's proposing is that we set up pre-tax payment accounts for people that don't get insurance through their employer. So their employers would be required to set up these pre-tax accounts, and this is sort of a complicated policy wonk thing, but those of us that get our insurance, health insurance from our employer like we all do, that's not counted. That health insurance is not counted as income, so we don't have to pay any income tax on that. If you're working for somebody that doesn't supply you with insurance and you go out and buy insurance, you've already paid the income tax on that money that you're going to now use to buy health insurance. So there's a very disparate treatment of people based on how they get their health insurance. What the governor is proposing is to mandate that all, these are basically small businesses, set up these 125 accounts. They're relatively cheap to set up. It simply allows the employee, if he chooses to buy health insurance, to use pre-tax dollars. And the cost to the employer is about $300 to set up this account. It's a payroll deduction kind of thing. And the tax penalty to the state is going to be about $2.3 million. And so that's one of the governor's initiatives. Why that's a plus is that there's probably $10 to $12 million of federal taxes that Minnesota people won't be paying. They can use them to help pay for their health insurance, and it could be amount up to if you're a middle income person, about $3,000 in tax breaks. So it's a significant amount. If your health insurance for your family costs $10,000 a year, which is sort of typical, you could get $3,000 deducted from that because of the federal tax break. So it is a good thing to do, and but there is a cost to the state in terms of lost state taxes. If I was in Washington, I might not like these tax breaks, but I happen to be here in Minnesota, and you know, why would we send money to Washington that we can keep in Minnesota if we don't have to? He has an initiative. One of the things I'm most interested in is starting to change the way we pay for health care for any of us, not just medical assistants, but for all of us, and to pay for performance. And he has an initiative there that's about $1.2 million. Instead of paying providers for services and services and services, we'll pay them to actually improve somebody's health. And that is a whole different mindset. And this proposal of the governor is a good one. It's relatively modest, I must say. Well, one of the significant things he's proposing is roughly 2% COLA for long-term care facilities. That's nursing homes and LCFMRs and all the other code names that we use. 2% and 2%, basically. That's $92 million. I'll talk about that in a minute. So that's a lot of money just to give a 2% raise basically to nurses and nurses' aides working in nursing homes. Cost the state $92 million a year. He has some other initiatives that I think I'll skip. One of the things that we will fight, and I don't know if this committee or the speaker is going to determine the TANF reserve money is money we get in a block grant. It's for the basically supposed to be used for the welfare people, usually single moms with kids. And that money is supposed to be spent on those people, but Representative Slawik will fight over how much of that should be spent on early childhood, and Representative Clark will fight over how much of that money should be spent in housing, and Tom Huntley will be fighting over how much it would be spent on basic support for these families. So that is something that we're going to have to deal with, and this committee or the speaker will have to decide who gets which part of that TANF reserve.
Representative Huntley, do we have some written, simple federal guidelines for those? And if maybe if you can't, don't have them written out, maybe Chris Van Lys could inform us of what they can be used for.
Yeah, we have a summary that we can have put out to you. Basically, it's supposed to be used on the same people. But to be honest, the state over the last number of years has taken that money to supplant other programs that we're already paying for so that we freed up money in the general fund.
Okay.
But
We can get that for you. Research people have pamphlets on this prepared. Let's see. What's next? Again, the governor is, for those that don't know, back to the Health Care Access Fund, that's what's supposed to fund Minnesota Care. There's about $150 million surplus left over from last year. As I said before, that was supposed to be used just for to provide health insurance for working folks that don't get insurance where they work. Over the past 4 or 5 years, we've taken about $580 million out of that fund and put it into the general fund to balance the budget. The governor is proposing a number of things this year, most of which I support, but I don't like where he gets the money. It's from the Health Care Access Fund, and Representative Dreiling knows that he's taken about $45 million out of the Health Care Access Fund for the Mental Health Initiative. Most of the mental health initiative I agree with, think it's a good thing to do, and I personally am very willing to any benefit that we increase for people that are mentally ill that happen to be on Minnesota Care, then that's an appropriate place to get that money. But I don't think we should use that money for people that aren't medical assistance or GAMC. So that's an issue we'll have to deal with. He has $10 million for a critical access dental care coming out of the Healthcare Access Fund. He's got about $1 million for a very good program for HIV AIDS insurance. But again, is that the appropriate source of the money? And then in the Department of Health, he's taking $18.5 million of healthcare access money for electronic health grants to people that need it. Small communities, small clinics can't really afford the upgrades in their computer systems and medical records that they need to do. Again, is that the appropriate source of money? And he's taking this time, and this is a new one, I believe, the state does fund graduate medical education. These are primarily residents at various institutions around the state. He's taking $16 million, again, out of the Health Care Access Fund to fund that. It's a good program, but is that the right place to find the money? And he's taking $12 million out of the Health Care Access Fund to fund his Healthy Connections. It's a new insurance program that he wants to help people find insurance cheaply, and I think it's a good program, but I'm not sure it'll be funded out of the Health Care Access Fund. Representative Swigum was here earlier, and he has a bill that's sitting in my committee that would equalize the rural nursing home rates and long-term care facilities with the metro area, and that's $30 million. So that's sitting there. I have a bill that over the past 4 years we've cut hospital payment rates for people in Medical Assistance Minnesota Care by about $293 million. I have a bill that was heard today that would eliminate those cuts for part of the program, and that has a $125 million price tag. And I talked about the guys having a heart attack.
You know,
you should go to St. Mary's and work. They know how to deal with that. This is what I meant last but not least. Governor's 2% 2% COLA is $92 million. We heard bills today that have 6% and roughly 6%, which just gets the nursing homes back to where they were corrected for inflation 5 years ago. That has a $300 million price tag. So obviously we're not going to have money to do all those new things, but
Every time I look at those numbers, I remember the song from when I was, I think, in the 50s about, "Hey, Big Spender, spend a little time with me." We have a number of items going on in this committee that have to do with health care reform, and we're taking a slightly different approach. He's telling me to speed up here, and so I will speed up and say that while we've spent a lot of time talking about access for people who don't have insurance, the 7% that don't have insurance, we have a huge problem with the 93% that aren't getting their money's worth, and how you address that problem is even more difficult than addressing the 7%. So with that, I'll turn it over to
Representative Aver.
I realize that as I'm sitting here, I'm holding you between, I'm lasting between you and dinner. So this is the amount of notes I brought, and I checked off five of them already because the chairman already mentioned them. We're expensive. And I think that the most would agree that what we buy is something that we ought to buy. We're a state that has become, that is generous by its nature. And we have many programs that are safety nets. So we have some programs that are safety line. You can kind of crawl up and move along. And some people need supports forever. Some people need supports for a while. Those supports are expensive. And one of the challenges you're going to find in this committee, as you establish targets, and as you decide if you're going to raise taxes or not, and I'm inclined to think you're not going to, is that how do you fund all the things you want to fund? We throw around numbers like $150 million, $300 million, like it's water, and it's not. It's money that could have gone to a K-12 program or to fund a house or to fund some clean water. And so I'm very aware of the choices that we make, and not embarrassed to come here and tell you that these are some good things you want to invest in. The two things that weren't mentioned that the governor had, has this insurance exchange, which is tied to the 125 plan. That's an interesting and a good idea, I think. I'm thinking we should have maybe more than one. The hour's late, and we'll discuss that more later. But also, there's some administrative improvements that the governor brings forward in some uniformity and billing. And there's a number of other things that are all mentioned in this first, so I won't delay it by doing that. But I'll just give you a couple of thoughts. Where the money is found in our budget is in largely the forecasted increases in the medical assistance costs for health care. And I've become more and more impressed as a provider that a lot of those costs are going unchecked, and some of the quality in those costs is not very good. We pay our providers a pittance, a low cost in most cases. If you're a nursing home or a chiropractor or a clinic or MD or anybody, hospitals, you're working below cost for the medical assistance people. And at some point the lines cross, and you can't do it anymore. Minnesota Care pays slightly better, but it's still below cost. And yet we spend all this money. And so it's a terrible dilemma. And so Chair Huntley's had some hearings, one of which was two and kind of the same from different places, where clinics that have been innovated to do better care for congestive heart disease, and they actually get people out of hospitals, they lose money in their own systems to the tune of millions of dollars because we reimburse for procedures, not for the right kinds of things. And so somewhere in a bipartisan, non-political way, we need to find a way to get our arms around how do you make the money be well spent. And that, if there's a pot of gold anywhere in our budget, that's where the pot is. And I think that we're going to attempt to dent that a bit. But that's something that's really important, because I don't think that you want to go home with a 2-2 nursing home COLA. I just don't think that's where you want it to go. But if the budget comes out tomorrow with the forecast a little lower than what it may be, which is my gamble, that would be where I'd put my dollar. It's going to be a very interesting time. And the governor may have a rich budget, which would be a frightening thought to me. Just to caution members, this targeted case management, which may be a foreign idea to many of you, is money that the counties spend, and we spend it wisely, and they spend it well. My county spends it wisely. But if they don't get the money, the DECRA program gave a bunch of cuts. It's $80 million or something a year, and the rules still aren't out, heaven forbid. So no one knows how it's going to hit, but counties are already making some retrenchments in their snow plowing departments and in their road repair departments and their other social services to handle that they can keep these family programs intact, because those are keeping people out of home placement, which is also very expensive. The risk is, and it's a challenge for the one of the three things you made as your hallmark, was if those are not backfilled, then I'm a hired gun. It's going to put pressure on property tax. And all the work you're going to do through the Marquardt work, I think, is commendable. He's being very open and inclusive and with all his ideas. And it's just one more challenge you have. And I think we're going to have to knuckle down together and forget politics and find a way to resolve some of those matters and try to find ways to, hate to do more with less. We did that already in 03 and 04, and I hated that. But I think we have to find ways to see what's the most important and what's important and what's nice. And in fact, during those times, I had my own way of looking at things. I did essential, important, and nice. And I think that if we keep the postcards out of it, we can move some of the nice programs into the important and essential ones and actually govern well and make the monies go a little further than you might have thought. The postcards pop up, and the nice programs will continue, and nobody can touch them. And what happens in this business is that well-intended legislators 20 years ago thought of a great idea, and a program got sprung up, and it's a wonderful program, and it serves 10 people. It used to serve 1,000. And there's an executive director, and they have little meetings, but those should be consolidated in some way that's friendly and respecting those who are left. They need to serve those 10 people in a way that's better suited to their needs. And so that'll be my counsel to my good chair along the way. While we still attempt to do the high things that you hopefully would do in this area, and it will not be easy. So that's your thought. I'll stop.
Thank you. Questions? Representative Keller?
Representative Abler, you've always been a thoughtful and kind person, and I see that in your face when you're testifying tonight again. And so I just also want to enter into another possibility in your brain, because I know that, you know, one of the great things about brain research is we can keep building new pathways and new ways to do things. And so there are some other options, and I hope when the time comes you'll think about those other options that maybe not have such a fixed view of the world about the scarcity model.
Any other questions? I know your budget is probably the most complicated, particularly as it relates to your relationship with the TANF funds and the federal government and how you can use those and the health care access fund. I've avoided coming to your committee for a reason. I know it is. But I have a great deal of trust in the chairs and the lead of the committee to be innovative, to be creative, to recognize the importance of your task. And probably the little bit I know might be real dangerous, and I probably should even know a little bit less, maybe. But I do really, really appreciate your testimony. I think that last night's testimony in Rochester with the health providers and your testimony tonight and my little bit of knowledge tells me it's a complicated issue. When I meet with my business people, small business people in my communities, you know, what you said about the 7% of the people that don't have insurance, that's a tragedy. But that isn't nearly as difficult of a problem to solve as the 93% of us that have insurance that the employer says I'm no longer able to afford it, or we're shifting that cost to the co-pays or the deductibles and everything else that goes along with that. And if your committee can start solving some of that problem, finding some ways, and some states I understand have done that, like Utah with the uniform forms. I did my physical this year. My doctor came out and said, here, I'll show you what I have every day to deal with and what the difficulty is. If we can go down and find some of those efficiencies long term, it'll help also the 93% of us that probably have insurance that we're concerned that we can't afford a few years from now. And one group come in and their insurance rates are going up 22% next year. And, you know, they don't know how they're going to be able to continue their coverage. And obviously there's going to be shifts in that. So, any other questions? With that, thank you very much.
Thank you.
And good luck.
Mr. Chair?
Yes?
Is a motion in order for you to buy us dinner?
Sure.
No.
When? So we'll do that. Let's have the meeting adjourned.